ambition trumps talent every single time. So I have seen there are people out there with so much more talent than I have, just so much more talent, but they do not produce work for whatever reason. And I think actually part of it is because they are so obsessed with creating something perfect that they do not produce the work. And I actually don't feel that I produce that much work compared to other, there are other people who are producing so much more work. And it is really that quantity. If you are just producing lots of stuff, people will see it. And not all of it has to be perfect and not all of it has to be fantastic. But if you are creating it consistently, mm-hmm. putting it out there and letting people know through some sort of social media mechanism, this is here, you know, slowly and surely, I do think you start to build a platform.
Hey, everybody, what's up? It's Chase. Welcome to the episode of the show. That was Geraldine DeReuter. If you are not familiar with her work, you are in for a treat in today's episode. She's an amazing writer, a James Beard Award-winning writer, in fact, and the writer behind The Everywhere-ist. She's written a couple books. I have to tell you what I love about, well, there are many things that I love about Geraldine, not the least of which is she is hilarious and incredibly open and vulnerable. If you read her work, it comes through. But more than that, it'll come through in today's conversation because we talk a lot about how she went from someone who lost her job to a dream career. And she doesn't sugarcoat it, right? It's not gold-plated. The grit that Geraldine shares with us is a story of her finding her way through writing. And specifically, I would say writing as a way to find herself, to find her career, to find stability in a world that doesn't always offer that. One of my favorite things about this episode is that although we're talking about writing, we can be talking about anything. This episode and Geraldine's path in particular is around finding and doing what you love. And then doing that in such a way that you can make it your life, that you can make it a huge piece of not just who you are, but how you make money and how you get to move around the world, how you can engage with the world around you. Food, in this case, has something that has been interesting to Geraldine. She was writing about it. People started thinking it was funny and witty and interesting. She wasn't sure. She just kept putting it out there in the world. And today, again, as a James Beard Award winner and someone who's published multiple books, it's a story of brilliance. It's a story of simply doing what you're put on this planet to do or what you feel in your bones is the right thing to do, even when you're unsure. There's a couple stories, a couple moments in her story where the people in her life remind her that this is what you do. This is what you're good at. Just keep doing it, even in the face of adversity. So I have long been very inspired by her story, and you will too. Again, regardless of what you want to be or become in the world, writer or otherwise, I can't wait for you to enjoy today's episode. Again, we talk a lot about a couple of her books. Most recently, If You Can't Take the Heat, which is your latest book. I'm going to get out of the way. Yours truly and Geraldine DeReuter. Geraldine, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being a guest today. Very excited to have you.
Thanks for being here. Thank you for being here. Thanks for having me.
We're here together. We made it. We made it happen. I can't wait for today's conversation. It's going to be wide ranging. And at the same time, if the people who are listening or watching, which we know they are, they identify as creator, as entrepreneurs, as people who want to do things in the world. Your story is a fascinating one on many different vectors. You do have a book that we're going to talk about today, but I think the story behind the book is also a fascinating one. So before we get into that, if you could, let's just go to like, what would that be? 30,000 feet in mm-hmm. We are not you flying in a Boeing 737. We are flying in a different airplane. And I would just orient us for people who might not be familiar with you or your work. Give us a little backstory. What do you do? How do you describe yourself? And what is it that you're working on that makes you a guest on the show today?
So my name is Geraldine. I am a James Beard Award-winning writer. I am the voice behind the Everywhere's blog, which I don't know, your audience may or may not be familiar with. I've written a few viral blog posts that for some reason have just gone. So one was about Mario Batali's cinnamon rolls, and that was the post that won me the James Beard Award. And that was shared by Martha Stewart, by Pete Wells of the New York Times. I think Dan Savage was sharing it. And then the second one was about an ill-fated Michelin-starred restaurant.
Which I love.
That we ate at.
Hilarious.
Thank you. And that one ended up on the homepage of the New York Times. It was in the Washington Post. It was in international headlines across Italy, and also Stephen Colbert's segment on it, of all things. My first book came out in 2017 because my blog used to be more travel focused. So my first book is called All Over the Place and was a more travel centric book. And my second book, kind of in the wake of having these viral blog posts be very food focused, my second book is a collection of food essays, and it is called If You Can't Take the Heat, Tales of Food, Feminism, and Fury. And that is out March 12th.
And they will be the drop date for our show is timed with your podcast release. So I will say for you, it's available everywhere and it's amazing. I'm holding it up right now. Thank you for sending me an advance copy. It's one of my favorite things about my job is I get to read all my friends and co-conspirators and inspirators. I get to read your stuff. Gosh, I feel like I always get it early, and it is such a treat. And I could say the same for this particular book. Amazing cover too, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm working on the cover for my book right now. So I'm like inspiration galore.
Yeah. That's a whole saga, isn't it? I'm really curious to hear how the cover. Yeah. I'm curious to hear how the cover conversation is going for you.
It's interesting. We'll leave it at that.
So embattled, right?
Interesting. I'm talking to my agent and publisher, who I love, adore both of them deeply. But that is a conversation that I'm having today a little bit later. So, yeah. But enough about me. This book is to me a fascinating set of stories. They all weave together in an interesting way. And a lot of this came about, if I'm not mistaken, from what I know, is you lost your job. And a lot of people that I know have either lost their job or we're on the backside of the pandemic here, realizing that, man, you know, life is short. What are we going to do with our time? How do we want to spend our days? And it is a mission of the show to unpack people who have navigated that, specifically because we should be doing the things that bring us joy in this world. So it would be an interesting thing to start with here on the show today. If you walk us through the process. There was some changes in your life and you started making a go of something that was radically different than what you were doing before. Tell us about that.
2008. Yep. I'm 27. I'm 43 now. So, and I worked at a company called Cranium, which is the board game company. So they were based here in Seattle. All
right. RIP Richard.
Oh my gosh, Richard was our CEO. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't, it's too early in the morning. Chase, do not.
Okay.
It's too early in the morning. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. So Richard passed away. Oh, shoot. What did you do?
I'm sorry.
What did you do,
I'm so sorry. I just love that man so much. And you said his name.
Yeah. No, you said his name. I just said,
I said his name. I can't say Cranium and not say his name, because he was just an amazing friend. So you were there.
So Richard was our CEO and unfortunately passed away, I believe a year and a half ago now, due to complications from COVID, and he was very young. So that was quite shocking. That was jaw-dropping shocking. In my early 20s, or in my mid late 20s at this point, worked there from kind of my mid 20s to my late 20s. And it was unfortunately quite a shocking end to Cranium, like not really great for a lot of us. So I was on vacation in Italy, and I knew the end was coming. And a friend of mine sent me a text and he was like, yeah, we've all been laid off. And I remember writing back, well, who's we? And he goes, you, me, and essentially everyone we work with. And I was like, oh, so it was a pretty rough acquisition. And Hasbro took over the company and basically everyone got laid off. And so at this point, I'm 27. I am engaged to who will, my now husband. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he was like, well, you know what, you'll figure it out. And I had been blogging and writing. I was a copywriter at Cranium and I'd been blogging for them. And he's like, just write. He's like, just write and you'll figure it out. So I did some freelance writing jobs and nothing was sticking. And at this point in time, my husband, who actually is a guest, was a guest on your show. So my husband's name is Rand Fishkin. Rand was traveling a ton. And he was like, well, why don't you're doing this freelance work. Why don't you travel with me? And I said, all right, I'm going to do that for just a couple weeks. So a couple weeks turned into a couple months. And I was traveling with him and he's like, well, why don't you start? I was sending these huge long emails about our travels to our friends. And Rand said, well, why don't you start a blog? And I was like, well, I don't know. And so I start a blog and a couple months turns into more months. And suddenly I'm blogging more and more. And he's like, well, maybe this is what you do. And I'm like, no, this is not a thing. Like, this is not a thing people do. I am just getting up every day and writing a blog and traveling with you. This is not a thing. And every day, almost every day, I would wake up and I would say, what am I doing? And he would say, just keep writing. And I thought, this is the most directionless thing I have ever done. And I have to say, it was born of privilege. To be able to do something like this is completely born of privilege. And there in 2008, the blogging landscape, you have to understand, there was a lot of blogging going on. There was not a lot of other media creation. There was no TikTok. People were not doing videos. YouTube was not what it was, if it even existed. I don't even remember.
It did, but barely.
Barely, right? It was not the juggernaut it was. And so media creation was a lot smaller. People were reading blogs a lot. And amongst the travel blogs, I realized, I wasn't the best photographer. There was a lot of budget travelers, and I wasn't really those. I wasn't a savvy traveler. I wasn't doing these massive backpacking around the world things that people were doing in 2008. Everyone was racing to be the next Bourdain, and I couldn't do that. And the one thing I realized I had more than anyone else was time. I thought I could be more committed to this and more consistent than anyone else could. And I had a voice that was different. So I was like, all right, I'm going to blog every single day, Monday to Friday. And I am going to just have the most authentic voice. And that meant like I was going to be a hot mess. I was going to tell people when I messed up. I was going to tell people when I got lost. I was going to tell people when I got robbed or scammed. And it was just going to be kind of this humorous narrative blog. So 2 years in, and I remember the day before I was looking at job postings because I was like, what am I doing? 2 years in, Time Magazine lists me as one of their top 25 blogs of the year. Out of nowhere. And my blog traffic increases, I want to say, a hundredfold overnight. And suddenly I'm like, what's going on? And Rand goes, I told you to just keep writing. So I keep doing that for a while longer. And the thing is, that was a bump, but here's, I don't know if you know, you probably know. It goes like this, right? You're like, nothing, nothing, nothing. Something happened. And you're like, okay, I'm going to stay up here, but you don't. You don't drop back down to where you were, but you drop down a little bit. And then nothing, nothing, nothing. And then something happens again. So I had the first drop down where nothing was happening again. And I was like, oh, am I back down to where I was? And I would write a bit and I would have a couple posts that went viral, a couple things, but nothing really big. And I wrote an article and an agent contacted me. And she said, are you interested in writing a book? And I'm like, yes, yes, absolutely. And I met with her and she did not want to represent me. And this happened like five more times.
Wow.
Yeah, it was devastating because all I wanted to do was write this book. And finally, I met my agent, Zoe, who represents me now. And we ended up selling my first book to auction. And I was like, okay, this is it. This is it. And it didn't quite do what I wanted. It did okay for it sold, you know, like, what is it? Like 99% of books sell something like under 100 copies, you know, and I think I've sold like 20,000 copies of my first book, which is respectable. Like there's no metric by which it's not respectable. I've almost sold through my advance, which was like, I mean, we can talk about it too. I'm okay to talk about numbers. My first advance for my first book was $50,000, which is not bad for a first book. So I was like, okay, I'm chugging along. But now I'm like depressed. I'm like, my first book didn't do anything. And then I go into this state of kind of, my father passes away. And that's kind of unrelated, but, and then Trump is elected, which for me was a blow. Maybe it's not for all of your listeners. And then I had some other personal stuff that happened and I like just stopped doing anything. And I cannot write and I'm getting nothing done. And I'm like, well, I guess my career is over. Like I was done and I had this malaise. And so I was like down here, right? Like I was down in the bottom of the career pit. And in 2017, end of 2017. So my book came out. When did my book come out? My first book, I want to say, came out early 2017. My father died 2016. So this was end of 2017. And I haven't written really. I haven't done anything for like a year and a half. Mario Batali sends out this cinnamon roll recipe in his apology letter for sexual harassment. And it's like his newsletter. And this is during kind of the apex of the Me Too movement. And it makes me so angry. And so I want to pitch it out. I want to write a piece and I want to pitch it out to, like, I'm thinking I could send it to Bon Appetit. I'm thinking I could send it to all these places. And then I remember that none of these places ever buy my work. They never accept my pitches. And I'm at this point in my career where I know I can't take rejection. And I keep thinking about the thing that Rand always tells me, which is don't write for other people, write for your platform. So I decide to write the blog post on my platform instead. And the blog post, I write it in, and this is, I don't mean this as a flex, but I mean it as a where my brain was at the time. I wrote the Batali post in 45 minutes. I sat down, spat it out, and it went viral in a way nothing I had written before had. My blog crashed. I think I got 5 million visitors to the blog in a week. I was doing press for it. And then my Twitter account got hacked. I mean, it was bonkers. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Maybe I'm not totally bad at this. Maybe there's something here. But then I still don't know what to do. And I'm vlogging a little bit, but nothing ever feels like that. Nothing ever felt like that post. So then COVID hits and I'm trying to write. And, you know, that's what we were all trying to do. We're like, okay, it's the worst time in our lives. Let's try and create the like big work of our lives. And I could talk about that, but that's a whole separate story. And then I wrote when COVID ended. That's the wrong phrasing. When we were vaccinated, because it's still going on. When we were vaccinated, we took a trip to Italy. And That's where my family's from. I did not think I would see a lot of people again. And we went to Italy and we had this disastrous meal. And I wrote a blog post about it. And that one went insanely viral again. And a friend of mine said, "Look, the two pieces that have been the biggest hits of your career have been food related." And she was like, "I know you've been thinking a lot about your second book and it hasn't manifested." She goes, "Just write a book of food essays." She goes, "You'll sell it in a minute." And that's what I thought. I thought, I'm just going to get the second book out there. I just need to get it done with because I don't know what's happening with my career. And that was the goal. But after it started manifesting, I realized, oh, this is so natural feeling, and this is so easy. So it went to auction. I wrote the proposal in like a few days, and it went to auction, and we wrote this book in less than a year. So it all manifested very, very quickly. So that is where I am now. I'm like this. Accidental. I call myself an accidental. I was an accidental travel writer, and now I think I'm an accidental food writer.
But
And
there's
that was a
this,
very long story. So.
but that's the goal with this format, right? And part of the reason that I think that narrative arc is so fascinating is because it is filled with all of the same ingredients that every single one of us have experienced. The sort of pit of despair, the doubt, the wins along the way that are very difficult to, you look in your back, you look behind you in your rearview mirror, and it's very difficult to see where they came from. And then you have this
Or yeah, you can't
paralysis, like,
replicate them.
I have the paralysis, like, I want more of that juice that I just got, but I don't know how I get it. Then you probably misascribe a bunch of things. Well, I did this and this, and I hopped on one foot and I ate pancakes on Tuesday. And you try and recreate these things that you did. And what I love about your story is that at the core of it was something that Rand said to you early on, just keep writing. And so I'm wondering, I guess the question that precipitates from that is, do you feel like that actually was the cure for your, personal journey, and ironically, your professional journey was just keep doing the thing. And because it didn't seem like you didn't tell stories about doing a lot of other stuff. You hope to get an agent, and you wrote, but it wasn't like you were doing everything possible in the world to make yourself a writer. You were doing the verb so you could become the noun.
Again, we're talking about several years ago. So the blogs had a different visibility. Twitter was a different format of visibility. But I would say that, and I have said this often, first of all, you can't be the thing you want to be without doing the thing, right? You can wish all you want to be like an actor, but if you do not go on auditions, it's not going to happen. The other thing I would say, and I think this is something that actually my husband and I have discussed a lot of the time, is that ambition trumps talent every single time. So I have seen there are people out there with so much more talent than I have, just so much more talent, but they do not produce work for whatever reason. And I think actually part of it is because they are so obsessed with creating something perfect, that they do not produce the work. And I actually don't feel that I produce that much work compared to other, there are other people who are producing so much more work. And it is really that quantity. If you are just producing lots of stuff, people will see it. And not all of it has to be perfect, and not all of it has to be fantastic. But if you are creating it consistently, and that's what I was doing for those first 2 years, especially, creating it consistently, putting it out there, and letting people know through some sort of social media mechanism, this is here. Slowly and surely, I do think you start to build a platform. It is not impossible. And so I think that I've seen people do it. I have.
And just take, for example, the post, the Batali post, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. This is an example of just producing, and the muscle gets strengthened, that creative muscle inside of you. The habit is there to put it out regardless of if it's an A or a C minus.
Exactly.
And yeah. And to me, this is, you know, when I did the research in advance of our conversation today, and I went back and I read a lot of these old posts. They're hilarious. They're brilliant. And there's this urgency with them that you can tell. There's an authenticity. And I feel like in the same way that the message that you're sharing is like, show up consistently, do work in order to be the verb, or to be the noun, you have to do the verb. And the thing that actually cut through was the you part of the work. And I think so many creators, they're looking out there for the thing that they want to, you know, I need to be this or that. And that when you're like, what, how did this freaking cinnamon roll recipe make me feel? Tick, 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 tick. You know, it just sort of falls out of you. But it can't fall out of you if you haven't spent time doing that over and over and over. So the question here is, how important was the you part of your work relative to all the other stuff that you've articulated as valuable? How much of it was the you part?
It's my only differentiator. It's my only differentiator, right? Like I am not smarter. I am not more clever. Like I am not funnier. I am not, like, we can go through the list, right? We can go through the list of things I'm not. I am not prettier. I am not more talented. Like, but I am more me than anyone else out there. And I'm going to, Rand is, I can hear my husband rolling his eyes from three floors down because I'm going to quote Springsteen right now. But so have you read Springsteen or listened to Springsteen's memoir? So there is a part. Oh my God. It's okay. So there is a part in his memoir where he realizes, he's like, I wasn't the best songwriter, right? And I didn't have the best voice. And he goes, I realized that. But what I realized is that I could sing my songs with a sort of authenticity and uniqueness that no one else could. And so ultimately what he realized is I could be more Bruce Springsteen than anyone could be. And so I needed to make them want Bruce Springsteen. And that's fundamentally true. And so what I think people need to realize is you need to make people want you. And so you need to be authentically you.
I want to interject something here, question, because there are people who I think are so judgmental of themselves, and we all are at different times in our life, but how, when you might be insecure, you're like, I don't have anything to say. My life isn't special. I'm not special, or I don't feel like showing up. You know, it's hard to stand out and fit in at the same time. Like, what would you say to someone who has a lot of those insecurities? Did you ever have those insecurities? And is that a piece of this puzzle?
Oh, sorry. Did I ever have those insecurities? Sorry.
I love it, but that's but right now that's keeping someone from doing the thing you're asking them to do.
Right, but like I think also well, I think that's twofold. I think one is like acknowledging that everyone feels that way, right? Like everyone fundamentally feels that way. We all have imposter syndrome. I have talked to New York Times bestselling authors who are like, "How did I get here?" You know, I talked to a woman who yesterday had two James Beard Awards. And she was like, I still have imposter syndrome. And I was like, yep, Katie, they keep giving you these awards because they feel bad for you. That's what happened. That's what's going on. So I would say one thing fundamentally is to realize that everyone feels that way. And I also think, I guess it depends on what story you want to tell, you know, and if you are comfortable telling it, revealing that And I think that there is something deeply relatable in that. I don't know how to make people believe in themselves. I don't, but I can, like, that's a hard thing to overcome because I fundamentally, there are days when I wake up and I'm like, I'm not good enough and I haven't succeeded and I haven't achieved what I wanted to. But I will say that, I think along with that, there is like you have to figure out what do you want more? Do you want to feel self-conscious more? Do you want to feel your insecurity more? Or do you want your goal more? Like, which do you want more? And if you want to achieve your goal more, then you just have to fight through this and be like, all right, I don't think anybody wants to hear what I say, but you just got to say it anyway. You just got to fake it. That's what I did for years. I pretended I had an audience when I didn't have one. I pretended I knew what I was doing when I didn't. And then I straight up said I didn't know what I was doing when I didn't. And that got me an audience. So,
And then
yeah.
5 million people show up on your doorstep.
Who saw? I
Thank you
didn't see
for
that one coming.
but no one does, right? That's the thing is,
Yeah.
I mean, Lady Gaga was toiling in, smoky bars in the Lower East Side until she wasn't, right? It all
Right.
like this is the story over and over and over again. And part of what I'm fascinated about,
Yeah.
why I wanted to dig into your story is because
Yeah.
it is just another beautiful manifestation. And to go from, your friends reading your blog to 5 million people and being one of the top in Time Magazine's top blogs. And yet you parlayed that into, your first book, which you were very candid about, and this latest book, which is, I mean, I also want to be clear. I am a food aficionado. I have many friends who are like you, James Beard Award winners, whether they're chefs or writers, and I like food, and still this book captured my heart and spirit,
Oh, thank you.
regardless of, that food is actually a subtext, right? Food is a, these are journeys for you personally, talking about the nostalgia I had talking when you were talking about Cheez-Its and, all of the things and you were a cat as a kid running around the house and they couldn't let you out because you were
Feral,
wild. To
yeah.
me, those, yeah, feral children. Is that same part of you that is just playing the part of you that is able to write all those things that you would not expect from a food writer? Is your ability to write about that and to write about your own experiences, do you do that because you know that it works, or almost sort of in spite of it, like this is the only way you can be? Is that same paradigm that you were talking about earlier? You just go to what you know and you find all the little beautiful details in there, because I felt like I was along for the ride of your life as you're writing about these food stories. And it's about food, but it's not.
Oh, well, first of all, thank you. Like, that's a kind of a beautiful endorsement of the book. So I'm really touched by that. I would have to say, one thing is whatever you do ends up being like flexing a muscle, and this kind of goes back to what I said earlier, where I think ambition and the people who do it more trump the talent. So I think if you continue to practice your craft, you become better at it to the point that maybe would exceed someone who comes with natural talent. Now, I'm not saying that I'm coming to the playing field with this, wealth of skill now, but I'd say wherever it is, whatever I'm able to produce now, it's because I've been consistently trying to create for all of these years, for good and for bad, and putting so much out there that maybe didn't work. And I think that because I had this ability to kind of practice on the blog for so many years to see what did work and what didn't, that really enabled me to embark on this in a way that wasn't completely blindfolded. I would say that I realized, oh, all those years of just keep writing, when it came to sitting down to a book, it wasn't as difficult as I thought it was going to be. In terms of the stories that emerged, you know, a friend of mine said something, which is she said, food writing is never about food. And that hit me. And whenever I had trouble writing this, I was like, I don't, you know, and I had trouble going in, I was like, I don't know if I can write an entire book about food. And then I realized, oh, I'm not really writing an entire book about food. I'm writing an entire book about my relationship with food. And that made it a lot easier. So
to me, that's like the texture. You could say that about anything, and we lose
Absolutely.
That perspective as soon as we start, you know, and this is the creative conundrum, right? It's just when you're reading everybody else's stuff, it feels so natural. But when you, then you, like, we're having this conversation right now, and it was at the end of the day, it is the individuality that we are all attracted to in others' arts of work. It's sort of like, what's the phrase? In the particular lies the universal.
So
right? And we keep forgetting that.
So true.
And you've just done a masterful job of it to realize that it's not about, again, I like food. I have eaten a lot of, you know, amazing restaurants. The story of I've had similar meals. I will not say not in Europe. I mean, in Europe as well, like Jean-Georges in Paris, a 26 course meal where they bring you foamed cantaloupe juice, and it's supposed to be a meal. Like, I mean, it was a very, very, very funny article that you wrote. But that's, you know, that you're writing about, that you're actually writing about life, and that and your experience specifically, which is something that I think we all could use a reminder. I want to just give a shout out again to the title. If You Can't Take the Heat, Tales of Food, Feminism, and Fury. Amazing, amazing book. And help me understand, I guess, before I let you go, help me understand, what did you do well in this book, and what would you do differently?
Oh, goodness. That is a question. And this...
I'm a professional, so, Geraldine.
Yes,
this is my job.
Yes. Oh, it's so funny too, because I'm sitting here telling people that you need to believe in yourself, and who you are has value, right? Who you inherently are has value. And even if you think you don't have value, you do. People want to hear directly from you. They want your work. They want your uniqueness. Like, that is important. That is what you bring to the world. Even as I'm saying that, when you're like, Geraldine, what did you do properly? I'm like, I don't know. Anybody could have done that. I don't know if I... So like, what... This is the eternal struggle of any creator. But I would say, is in terms of what I did well, is I think I authentically brought myself to this book, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a friend of mine read it and she said, I could hear your voice in these pages. And I would say I'm very proud of that. And in addition to that, you know, to your point, because I authentically brought myself to these pages, and because those experiences were so true to me, there is something universal about them. So the number of people I've had who have said, God, this chapter hit me so hard, I related so much to this. And what's been amazing to me is that no one has said the same chapter. Like, no one has. They pulled out chapters and I was like, that was the one? That's the one that resonated with you? So that's been overwhelming to me. That's been phenomenal. So I think bringing myself and kind of the universality of those experiences, I think I did that well. In terms of what I did not do well, I mean, God, there's so much, right? Like, obviously the job of any creative is to second guess themselves, and then third guess themselves, and then, you know, do that ad nauseum. So are there things I would have changed? Maybe. Are there places where I would have held back? Maybe. I would say that one thing that I've noticed, and this is a broader issue for me, is that I am now at the point where first it was that I couldn't bring, you know, it was the struggle to bring myself authentically to my work. And now it is that I am more comfortable writing my feelings than I am telling people to their faces. So that is a struggle. That is a more philosophical struggle and less about the work. So if you want to tell me, if I were to tell you truly about the work, what I would have changed, I would have not done as much alliteration, because when you have to record your audiobook, alliteration is an absolute pain in the ass.
Oh, I did my own stunts too. I know how hard that is.
Oh my God. You're like, why did I write that sentence?
You're like, who wrote this?
It looks so good. It looks so good typed out. And then you start to say it after you've been recording for 5 hours.
Yeah. Again, the title for those of you out there, If You Can't Take the Heat, Tales of Food, Feminism, and Fury. It's a page turner. I found myself going back to the first recipe that I ever personally came up with.
Please tell me what it was. It was a fascinating mixture
of sliced cheese.
Mm-hmm. What kind of cheese?
The shittiest orange Safeway cheese that was in my refrigerator from my mom. I'd slice that up. I put it on bread and I'd put it in the microwave and I'd microwave it for 45 seconds. And what came out was this soggy, nasty ass, beautiful thing to me. That was my first recipe. And I was proud AF of that. I mean, it was like, of course, and I would not touch this. I mean, the bread was so soggy that you couldn't actually hold it. I mean, it had no stability.
Cut it with like a spoon.
Yeah. I want to say thank you so much for bringing me back to that time and helping me cover so much other ground. And it's been a treat to hear about your story. Thank you for being so transparent. And I'm a fan. You're always welcome on the show. I hope the book does well. It would not surprise me one bit when it does well when it comes out. And thanks so much for being a guest in the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. And I hope you make that recipe again. I do.
I would have to make a special store or a special trip to a terrible store to buy terrible ingredients to make something that was terrible, but it might just be worth it.
Yeah, I believe in you.
Signing off for myself and Geraldine. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. All right. Hey, before you go, thanks so much for listening. And if you got value from this show, chances are your community will too, right? In the particular lies the universal. Please share this link to the show with a friend or mention the show on social. That is a huge benefit for us and hopefully in exchange for providing value to you. I want you to know that I really appreciate your time, the attention, anything that you give to the show, and the questions that you ask our guests, either on social media or through my text community. All that is pure gold. This community, like any community, is a testament to that old phrase, a rising tide floats all boats. And by elevating one another, by sharing and resharing this show, the tidbits that you learn and the experiences you take away, all of that has a collective, massive, positive impact on the world. So, just a quick thank you. I appreciate all the effort you put into sharing for this show. All right, that's a wrap. Let's put today's episode into practice and get back to growing together.